Hello again and welcome to this week's Tech Plus, where we discuss all things tech, not only in South Africa, but the world. It's Ion with you and also joined as always by Kane, who's with us here in studio. Kane, how's it going, man? How was your week?
Going very well. My week was good. It's nice to see a little bit of the cooler weather rolling
yes,
through.
Yes, absolutely.
I think the week before we had some gnarly heat. Which I'm not opposed to. I actually quite like it.
There's a lot more to come.
But there's something to always appreciate about the cool temperatures.
But
I mean, there's heat. There's heat around SA though.
Yeah, but just looking at the temperatures around the world, like the other day, one of the countries went past 50. Where was it? I forgot now. It's Brazil, I think.
So
went past 50 degrees Celsius something.
So Rio de Janeiro.
That's it.
To Hell de Janeiro when its temperature exceeded 59.3 degrees Celsius over the weekend, resulting in Taylor Swift postponing her Saturday show after 1,000 fans fainted from the heat and one person died.
I saw Taylor actually, she was battling on stage herself. Fit as she is, she was battling to breathe. That's how hectic it was.
Well, I mean,
can you imagine that heat?
And 60 degrees Celsius.
No, that is that's hell, actually. That's literally hell.
That temperature, you can't even, at 50 degrees Celsius, at 45 degrees Celsius, you can't even fathom how hot it is. At 30 degrees Celsius, it's hot. Add 15 to that, and now you've got 45 degrees Celsius. That's going to be hot.
Have you experienced 50 before?
And then you add
before?
Another 15 degrees to that.
And the humidity. Have you experienced, what's the highest temperature you've experienced?
Between 45 and 52.
Same year.
Yeah.
45 to 50 in the wrist, in the Karoo.
Also the Karoo.
You can't breathe.
That's
you
the can't, Karoo.
There's no air. Like you blow on your hand just to make sure you're still breathing because you can't feel it going in. It's like you become one with the warm air around you.
I remember.
There's no breeze.
We were in Bavian's Cliff in the Karoo and it was breaking 50 and, you know, we could feel like this is a hot as hell day.
It's a different heat.
And I remember walking out because we were at a campsite, so it was, and it was hot. Everything, it's like walking through a syrup of hot air.
Oof.
That's what it's like. It's thick and it's hot. And I remember seeing a river. And I thought, this is the moment I've been waiting for. And it wasn't a super deep river. It was about shoulder height. And I ran and I jumped into it. And it was warm.
Yes. I'm not surprised because where I was in the rest also a couple of years ago, when it started raining, the actual rain was hot. I've never experienced anything like it. And then all the roads were like steaming from the water falling on it. It was crazy. Like I was surprised that the actual swimming pool wasn't boiling. But you know what else is crazy?
What's that?
It's our Black Friday gift we got this year from Eskom, the biggest Black Friday gift of all, which is stage 6 load shedding. I must admit, I know we're supposed to be used to it by now, but I must admit I really never saw it going this high.
Someone misspelt it and instead of getting 50% off our electricity, our electricity was off 50%.
Yo, I mean, we're used to it now, we shouldn't be surprised, but I thought, okay, maybe we can, you know, we won't go past stage 4 again until at least next year. And yesterday we get the message that stage 6 started at 12 noon all weekend until at least Monday morning, and then we don't even know what's happening after that. So a lot of stuff broke again. The electricity minister, Kgotsitso Ramakgopa, is of course telling all the stories again that we want to hear, how it's improving and it's going to get better. Every week it's the same story, maybe a few things added. But it's all, I believe, it's my personal opinion that it's all just a cover-up, you know. It's a smokescreen for what's really going on. It's not getting better.
No, I don't. I mean, I think when it suits, someone asked actually, it was on TikTok, they said, how did we have no load shedding during the Rugby World Cup? But here, you know, during the festive season, we're looking at having load shedding over Christmas.
It's suspicious.
It is, but mostly it seems like they have capacity to inject large amounts of capital to maintain the grid when they need to, but when it's not needed, then they don't. So I don't think it's a case of like, I don't think all the electricity is working and they're just cutting it. I think at certain times they are absolutely loading up the backup generators, you know, maximizing power production, and then outside of that, just you know, not doing it. And I think some people are just thinking, like, the, you know, the nerve of this, you know, getting frustrated with it. And rightly so, you know, rightly so. It is incredibly frustrating to now have to deal with 4 hours and then a 2 hour break and another 4 hours back to back.
Yeah.
Can you, like, that's un. I would rather have stage three since the beginning of the year and no day without load shedding than have, you know, a Friday night with 8 hours of load shedding over a Friday and Saturday period where you only have power for 2 hours. Most backup systems can't even handle that.
And no.
When that power comes back on and those backup systems recharge after, you know, 8 hours of no power.
Very flat.
Then the grid's going to feel it, you know.
You're. I mean, I would think that a lot of the demand is less over weekends. I suppose everybody's got their air cons on now with the temperatures climbing again.
I feel like air cons are the biggest trap ever because you, for example, right now, you know, it can be starting to get hot. It can get to 30 degrees Celsius, maybe 35 degrees Celsius. You say, right, let's put the air con on. What are you going to do on that day where it hits 40 degrees Celsius and we have 8 hours of load shedding?
You have to get used to the
You're
going to
melt. You have to adapt somehow. I mean, it's not comfortable. The worst thing for me is I can handle the heat. If it's hot, and I go out and run, I'm fine. But if I try to stay indoors and do work and work behind the desk or clean the house, I will start melting.
So you evaporate. Actually, you go running to activate your human cooling system. I mean, the sweat cools you down. Or do you go for a swim?
Must be something like that. I feel like it's easier to... You know, for me, if you're walking up a hill or you go doing a walk and it's particularly difficult, if you just jog it, it's much easier, in my opinion, than that just forcing a walk in a difficult. So for me, it's kind of the same thing. To pretend the heat's not there is like more difficult than just being like, whatever, it's hot, let's go and sweat. You know, that's
yeah, you face it head on.
Yeah,
you're exactly. I admire that. That's brilliant.
But you know, speaking of the nerve of Eskom. I think if there's anyone that feels a ways about another company right now, similar to how we might feel about Eskom, it's Dbrand's feeling towards Casetify. So Dbrand is essentially like the leader of device customization. If you want a specific skin for your phone, or you want to custom skin your PlayStation, or you want to put vinyl on something, then in terms of customizing your device, Dbrand is the place to go for that type of device customization. And Casetify is one of them that kind of make a little bit of a cheaper solution. So before we get into Dbrand's lawsuit with Casetify, we'll talk quickly about what, and I'm sure no one's heard of this term before, but it's called a trap street. Okay. In code, coders might leave something called a honeypot, which is essentially a hacker might be trying to hack into a website and he finds a place that looks like he gets access to the most valuable information and he goes into that door and it's a honeypot, it's a trap.
Ah.
And then now he's been caught. You know?
Oh, cool. Okay.
So a trap street is the same equivalent for a map creator. So someone who's making a map, who doesn't want anybody else to copyright their work, will put in a fake street. So that if you look at the other person's map and you see that fake street in there,
then you know it's been copied.
It's 100% copied.
That's very clever.
So what Dbrand did unintentionally with some of their art is they left Easter eggs in the art. So if you look really closely, you see something that you wouldn't have picked up right away. Maybe it's like a Pokemon card or something deep within the thing, you know, or the South Africa flag somewhere, or some sort of visual Easter egg. And they found some of Casetify's cases with these Easter eggs on.
Whoopsie.
And that's like
busted.
You know, how mad must you be at someone for having the audacity to not only copy your design, but copy the Easter egg in the design?
That's very clever. Very clever way of protecting your work, eh?
Yeah.
I must say.
Yeah. Another person who had to protect their work is Netflix. So we spoke about it. One of the biggest shows to explode, I think, of like the last year was Squid Games. Last 2 years, definitely Squid Games. And then Netflix came up with the bright idea that they're going to make a reality show, a Squid Games reality show. And that went live. They recorded it, people contested, and now some of the Squid Game contestants want payback over some of the alleged injuries.
So, I was going to say, now, at least the people don't die in this version.
They apparently get injured, though.
But almost. They almost die.
It's enough not dying to still have them sue them.
I wonder what kind of injuries they
got. See, that's obviously what they didn't understand. In the real Squid Games, there's no one left to sue you.
Exactly.
But you can't leave them alive. That's silly. Now you're in trouble. So obviously, some of the contestants are a little bit upset that they got injured during the filming of that. And Netflix has denied complaints of injuries resulting from the Squid Game, The Challenge's January filming conditions that reportedly resulted in some injuries. So as the Deadline reported, a day after the game show's release, two of the contestants have hired British personal injury firm Express solicitors to seek compensation for their claims of hypothermia and nerve damage resulting from the filming. A spokesperson for the show told Deadline that no lawsuit has been filed yet. Hypothermia and nerve damage. Sounds like you get nerve damage from hypothermia.
Yeah.
So they're making it sound like two individual things. But yeah. I think they probably had to do something that was cold. Maybe they had to, you know, do something with ice. Maybe they had to hold dry ice or something like that. They could have had some damage there. But that's pretty insane, eh? I mean, do you think, let's make a fun reality show where people can, you know, have a taste of Squid Games. And they get a little bit injured and they're like, okay, right, that's it. I'm suing. I am hiring British solicitors to seek compensation from Netflix for dare letting me get injured on their reality show. That's crazy. It's just crazy that's what, I mean, you know, you see those reality shows where people actually like run on like jumping castles and balloons. It was,
oh yeah,
what was it called?
Takeshi's Castle.
Takeshi's Castle is one of them, but that was more of like the Asian region,
yes,
reality show. We had some local ones. UK ones. Richard Hammond hosted one of them.
Yes,
I forgot the name of it. Now, they had to like jump on things.
Yeah,
and dodge.
They were mainly soft things, but sometimes it looked like it actually could hurt you.
Yeah, and you had to jump on balls and things like
that. Yeah, man, I know what you're talking about.
Like, if I went into something like that and I got injured, would you sue? I mean, if it was structural damage that shouldn't have been there and it should have been checked, then maybe. But if I, like, hurt my back because I decided to land with my face, you know, then...
But don't they sign forms before they go on these shows?
You would think they did.
You know, saying that you could get injured and then you can't sue the producers.
Yeah, it's like even a sign at a restaurant that says, like, enter at your own risk is enough for them to negate you.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, even dying.
Critically injured from their own mistake, you know. So you would think that something like that would be put in place.
But what happened to the actual Squid Games for Netflix? Because we've been waiting for the follow-up for so long now. I thought it was going to be released this year.
Wasn't there an English one coming?
I don't know, but there was supposed to be...
Or something?
It was supposed to be a follow-up on the major first one that we saw on Netflix.
Maybe they decided that a reality show is easier.
No, man. I want to see that guy because, you know, it left doors open for a follow-up at the end of that season one. So... No, man, carry on.
That would be a pity if we didn't, eh?
Okay, let's hope it comes in 2024.
Yeah.
Maybe it was delayed a bit. I don't know.
Well, with the writer strikes, maybe.
Yeah.
I feel like probably. That might. I'm sure it'd hit that region. You know, here's another thing. We all know it. I mean, Black Friday yesterday. So everybody was shopping.
And you?
Oh, yeah, obviously.
Well, online. Were you
online,
shopping online?
Yeah.
Because yesterday at noon, there was this company tracking online activity on the major retail platforms like Takealot. And by noon yesterday, there was already a guy who made a purchase on Takealot, I think it was Takealot, of 404,000 Rand.
Wow.
One purchase.
Wow.
I don't know what he bought or what, what was that. But his cart, when he checked out, was 404,000 Rand.
I know that Takealot released some of their early hours of the Blue Dot sale stats. So I think, you know, at 6 a.m. on Friday, which was essentially 5 hours and 59 minutes into Black Friday, beginning at 1 minute past 12 on Friday, someone had already checked out a cart of 135,000 Rand by 6 a.m.
What were they buying? I want to know what's inside it.
Probably like two TVs
At least a TV or two. Definitely.
I mean, a 65-inch really high-end TV will set you back like 50,000 Rand.
Yeah,
so it must be a TV in there, some PlayStation 5s, probably an electric car.
I wonder what it feels like to check out with that amount.
Terrible. I can't imagine it feels good. That's a lot of money.
And how does that even go off your bank account without suspicion?
Unless you're filling your house with furniture because you just built a house, then congratulations on building your house. But if you got a house and it's filled with furniture and you're checking out above 130,000 rand in your cart, like that guy, 400,000 rand. That's R500,000 on a...
My first question to this person would be, apart from asking what's in your basket, what did you buy, what was in your cart, would be, what's your profession? How do you make so much money? Do you work for government?
Was this 1 month's salary? Like, I need to know the backstory.
Can only be working for government in South Africa with that kind of money.
You must get your packages delivered in a limousine. There must just be a take-a-lot delivery van with your name on it that they've bought just for you, just for this delivery.
Hey, but listen, I keep forgetting. It's been a week or two now, and I keep forgetting bringing it up, but you just mentioned take-a-lot now as well, and the van. I got a message recently, and I checked, it is real, that Take-A-Lot opened a branch in Nice now.
They did, yes, by Freshline Fisheries.
Oh, is that where it is?
But it's like a pickup centre.
So okay, so how does it work?
So instead of getting something delivered to your house, you can have it as a, you can go pick it up from there.
Okay, but does it make it any faster?
I doubt it would make it faster. It might inherently make it faster because it's one less trip. You know, Take-A-Lot going from Cape Town or Joburg to George, and then from George to Nyasa, and then from Nyasa to your house. So I imagine it would also operate maybe as a distribution center as Maybe everything goes there and then gets filled.
Yeah, instead of going
there
to George.
So maybe in the rare case, sometimes what happens is a parcel will arrive after the delivery vans have left. Then your parcel will sit there maybe over a weekend, or maybe it's on a Saturday. So you might just be able to go to there and pick it up maybe.
That's nice. It's a bit of like almost like a depot. Yes. But I mean, when are we getting a warehouse with actual stuff in? Well, that would be nice.
My question is, what would be filled in that warehouse? Because do you want to hear some of the most top selling items within the first 6 hours of Black Friday?
Absolutely, yes.
I like looking at the first 6 hours because that's like people are going there to do, they've set out, they've planned this into their day. You know what I mean? If you're buying something on Black Friday within the first 6 hours of Black Friday, you've woken up at 6 a.m. to buy something.
Yeah, you must have a plan.
It can't just be from browsing.
Must be a man with a plan there. And you're going to tell us just after this.
Just after this.
Cool.
Heartbeat changing when you're around me is racing. I know it's getting late. Two more drinks in. Feel how I'm feeling. Somebody cut the brakes. Yeah. I hate to come on too strong, baby, but I'm freaking out when you're gone crazy. I know it hasn't been long, but I'm saying. Last train home now. We don't got a place to go. We don't got a place. for you something like magic. Something like magic.
And we're back with Tech Plus, the final one for the month of November. As I said earlier to somebody, I can't believe we actually here like a month to go to Christmas. Wow. It feels like there's a chunk missing of the year.
It does.
It's almost like there was June, July, August maybe, and now we jump to November. That's how it feels. So where's August and September and October?
Gotta ask that question.
So you're gonna tell us now about the top items. What top six?
Some of the top items that
people purchased online.
So the top items that were purchased within the first 6 hours from Takealot during Black Friday. At number one, the most top-selling product was Clip Drift Premium Brandy.
What?
Were you expecting that? I wasn't.
No, I didn't even know that's on Takealot.
Yeah, right. Like, that's a bit disappointing.
Ach, no, man.
Maybe the second place item will be less disappointing, which was Baby Soft 2-ply toilet paper in a pack of 18.
Are we still with the toilet paper?
That's like, people need to get over this obsession.
Yeah. No, man.
Third highest seller was a surprising 24-pack of Coca-Cola. This is wild. This is absolutely wild. And the best-selling tech product was the Naomi 4K Ultra Android Media Box, which was placed fourth, while a 58-inch Hisense TV featured in sixth place.
That's
the rest
like
of the
it.
Top 10 comprised of washing powder, prepared water, dog food, coffee, and skincare product.
Hmm. Okay,
not
some
what
of them
I expected.
Are also not what I expected. I'm actually quite disappointed.
No. I mean, number 8 was Montego Monty dog food.
But the toilet paper thing, eh?
The number 1 is premium brandy. What have we come
We're
to?
We're a brandy drinking nation. Clip drift, eh?
From the horse's mouth.
Yo, uh-uh.
That is crazy.
That's very interesting. So that was on Takealot.
That was on Takealot. And speaking of Takealot, there's actually some cool announcements that they have. So they've just got some electric trucks for Gauteng deliveries. Mm. So Takealot has launched a fleet of 6 JAC N75 EV 4-ton electric trucks that the e-commerce giant will use to make its Gauteng operations more sustainable and cost-effective. Surprisingly, though, this isn't the only 6 trucks that Takealot has that are electric. This 6 trucks actually brings the total fleet of JAC N75 EV trucks to 10, with the company having already launched a fleet of 4 trucks in Cape Town in October. So there are 10 4-ton electric Takealot trucks. That's a lot of electric trucks. That's awesome to see.
It's pretty cool that we're already on that kind of thing in South Africa. We expect us to be the very last.
So these trucks feature 130 kilowatt hours of peak power and deliver a 415 to 1,200 newton meters of torque. And JAC Motors says the N75 EV's 106.95 kilowatt hour batteries allows for a range of 200 kilometers per charge. That's really not that much, to be honest. But they are delivering in and around Gauteng, so it might just work.
Yeah. I mean,
Gauteng's not greater than 200 kilometers, left to right. And when a DC fast charger with a standard European CCS2 combo connection is used, the battery is fully charged in approximately 1 hour and 20 minutes, or 80 minutes in total. Huh.
That's why we need more charging stations, which they're planning to roll out soon, in January.
Yes, we can definitely see that. I don't think we'll see any Takealot electric trucks making their way down here, being thousands of kilometers away.
And imagine, And imagine, how do you get them here? But imagine 200 kilometers along the coast. That's not going to work. Where are you going to stop to charge?
So something always worth keeping in mind is if you ever see a truck towing an electric truck, we don't have enough electric chargers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's gonna happen, eh? You're gonna see that.
I don't doubt it actually. I have a strong feeling it's gonna be something that we see in the foreseeable future.
Yeah, definitely.
That is insane. And then we have My Broadband that featured a couple of deals for beating load shedding that happened during Black Friday. Some of which were quite cool, and if you happen to get your hands on one, that would have been great. We had a 600 watt 720 watt hour inverter trolley for 7,900 rand, an EcoFlow River Pro with an extra battery for 16,000 rand. So EcoFlow is like that designated system that's quite popular. And that will do you quite well. And then a Mercer 1 kilowatt hour 1280 watt hour inverter trolley for 13,000. So I think a lot of people might have actually got some good deals on some inverter systems. That I would have thought that might be a top seller on Takealot's orders.
Me too. I thought that would be at number one. Now it's freaking brandy.
Maybe there wasn't that many specials, because I was going through Takealot and I wasn't super impressed with all their specials. You know, I was struggling to actually find something that was resonating with me that didn't feel like a clearance sale.
Did you see all the memes about Black Friday?
No.
Where stuff's marked down. Like, it's always the same price. It's just the way it's presented.
Really?
Yeah. It's like now, like in September. Wait, October, November, December. So September it was $6.99. October, $6.99. And then in November, now with Black Friday, it was, they will just add, was $8.99, now $6.99. So psychologically, you think there's a 200 rand saving.
But then it's not.
But it wasn't even marked down, because it was the same price a month or two ago.
That scares me.
It's just the way it's presented.
Yeah. It just latches on. And I even saw, I saw something on Takealot. It was a Galaxy Watch 4, which usually sells for like 6,000 Rand. And it was 65% off, discounted from 12,000 Rand to 4,500 Rand.
No.
I promise you.
What?
I thought this must be a mistake.
Yeah, it must be.
This absolutely must be a mistake. In other news, the CEO of OpenAI, or ChatGPT, was removed from the board forcefully. He was ousted from the company.
I saw that somewhere, but why?
And then he was immediately poached from Microsoft a couple of hours later.
I'm sure.
And now he has a CEO position at Microsoft, which is very uncommon to see two CEOs in Microsoft, one for AI, one for Microsoft.
But why was he removed?
Well, there's some speculation going around. There's most certainly a couple of conspiracies going around. There's this conspiracy that there was a letter that was written to OpenAI, which described a powerful artificial intelligence discovery that could threaten humanity, which is like AGM, which is like the most highest level of, you know, artificial intelligence. And it means that artificial intelligence can outperform a human's task. So, you know, that's kind of the breaking point. It's like, it's one thing for AI to be able to do 30% of a human's work or 50%, but when AI can do a human's work better than a human at 3,000 times the speed, then we're really like tumbling into some dangerous territory. So there's some speculation that something like that had happened and then he had left. There's also speculation that he wanted to maintain an open source kind of approach to ChatGPT and kind of make sure as many people as possible can see the ins and outs of it to prevent, you know, damage, and maybe the OpenAI team wanted to maximize profits. So there's a few speculations going around, but the bottom line remains that there's definitely something strange going on.
Mm.
It's very weird behavior to see a board out a chair. Elon Musk actually went out to comment on the announcement that they owe it to the public to let the public know why the CEO was removed, just because of the influence AI could have on our society. You know, it's worth us knowing about these things in case there's something, you know, concerning to be aware of. So that happened, and that was most certainly a rock to the boat that is AI.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to monitor closely as that happens and that unfolds. Then in other news, Binance's CEO has pleaded guilty to money laundering.
Whoopsie.
And very, very strange, because a lot of people, you know, really looked up to him. He will have to pay a $50 million fine. He'll be stepping down as CEO, and he might get jail time as well. It's probably very likely that he will. And yeah, he's admitted to some degree of money laundering. He tweeted, "Today I stepped down as CEO of Binance. Admittedly, it was not easy to let go emotionally, but I know it's the right thing to do. I made mistakes and I must take responsibility. This is best for our community, for Binance and for myself. Binance is no longer a baby. It is a fully grown system." So yeah, he stepped down. Very, 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 very crazy. And admitted to money laundering.
Whoopsie.
But you know what's really, really crazy is when the whole FTX thing was going down, it was Binance that originally added pressure to the books of FTX, which ultimately led to the discovery of the money laundering. And what actually happened is Binance said to FTX that we will bail you out. Show us your books. Let us have a look at it and we'll bail you out. And then they went and said, these books are incredibly dangerous. We're absolutely not bailing you out. And that's when it went belly up completely. It's because there was like this hope that they were going to get bailed out by Binance. And then Binance said, your books are so bad. We're definitely not bailing you out. And this was all spearheaded by the CEO. And now the CEO admits to money laundering is a few months later. It's a wild, wild 360 degree. And 180 degree, and to the new CEO, who's got to basically deal with a customer run off. You know, he's got to prevent customers just leaving Binance, just flooding out. Imagine taking on a CEO role, and your number one priority is making sure people don't run away from the previous CEO, which you had nothing to do with.
Good luck.
What a place to be. Good what luck. A time to be alive.
Good luck. I hope there's a great salary there.
That is absolutely wild. Absolutely wild. And I think maybe he was under pressure. Maybe there was something, you know, that could have been far worse than the result that he was getting by just coming clean. Maybe his offense was minor in proportion to something like the billions of dollars FTX laundered through Almeca and, you know, that whole problem. But yeah, it just shows you sometimes things aren't always as they seem.
Oh no, definitely
not. As not as best described here. Absolutely mad. Is it a time for a music break?
Yes, and then we come back with the final stretch. In the back of the bar, you're talking to me with the lights on.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Tech Plus, this week's edition, wrapping up the month of November and looking at the week's biggest tech stories all across the globe. Kane, what's next?
So we spoke about it a little bit earlier, but it's a very cool idea. We spoke about Dbrand and their lawsuit against Castify for stealing their designs, so far so that they left Easter eggs in their design that Castify also happened to copy in their own designs. But Dbrand has a thing called an X-ray skin,
mm-hmm.
which basically is a skin that you'll put on as a vinyl to your phone that'll actually show you an X-ray of what's inside your device as the skin. So they have 125 different gadgets that you can put one of these skins onto, which are actually a real life X-ray of that particular device, which I think is a super cool tech cool skin. I would love that. That is awesome.
That's very cool.
Looks like you can see through your phone from any direction that you look, you know.
You see all the
see what
insights.
The components are, see where the battery is, see what
I'd love to do that on an iPhone and see what's happening when it heats up like that.
Yeah, it's just it's a mini microwave on high. You know,
there's a little spark there.
Funny enough, I actually know some friends of ours from New Zealand who have bought the iPhone 15 Pro, and they're saying that this is, you know, it's not good. They say that, you know, it's slower than his iPhone 13.
Really?
He's saying that it occasionally overheats.
Not just now, in the beginning days. Apparently, it's only when, you know, when it syncs and has to update everything, and then it's sort of a system slows down again.
He says it's slow. He says it gets hot randomly. He says it can be freezy at times. It most certainly, you know, overheats randomly.
It doesn't sound like an iPhone.
But I've spoken to other people who have iPhones who don't have that issue, right?
Because there was also this big bust in Gauteng this week.
Really?
Yeah, or recently at OR Tambo. Thousands and thousands of rands of iPhones, counterfeit iPhones, destined for Cape Town.
What?
Fake iPhones.
Really? And
they got caught.
Do you think they're going to be sold as real iPhones?
They were planning to.
What?
So how do you know that
right
you...
Right here in South Africa?
Yeah, how do you know that you don't have one of those fake iPhones?
What?
How do you know you have a real iPhone?
What? Yo, how do you know? What can you do?
Busted in at OR Tambo, eh? With all those phones.
What? Do you think that is wild, hey? I mean, right under our nose. Do you think that stuff only happens in America?
And destined for Cape Town. Whether we're going to sell it and say, this is a brand new iPhone.
What? That's insane. I can't believe it. I'm like, I'm skeptical. I'm like, is my Samsung real?
Yep.
What do I even know?
How would you know?
I don't know.
Because I think it looks and feels and everything like the real thing.
What? That's crazy. What? I don't even know what to think of that. You know, I have friends that always say, you know, in China, you can just buy counterfeit phones that look exactly like the real thing. And they literally are basically the same components. I just didn't expect to hear about that.
Yeah, but now they were busted. So they were confiscated. They weren't into the market.
Do you think they brought it in by plane? Did they say how it actually got brought in? How they actually ended up? I wonder if there's a story behind that. What was the suspicious thing that led them to check this out? Because if you see a bunch of iPhones, you're not going to be like, these are counterfeit. Yeah. There must have been some spark to that curiosity.
Yeah, I'm not sure. We'll have to read up online and see what happened there. But the guy appeared in court already. I think he was caught now. So he's...
It's a good way to make some money, bars. Eh? I mean, if you're paying a third of the price for an iPhone and you're selling it for three times the price, you're making two iPhones every, you know, two fake iPhones every time you sell one. Unbelievable. That is crazy. That is crazy. I wonder what Apple thinks about these counterfeit. How do you prevent that?
Would they even know about it?
How do you even prevent it? Like, what is a preventative? You can maybe employ...
But where was it made?
It must be India and China.
Oh,
I would think, because they are the ones who have the design specs, you know.
So if your phone sounds or looks a bit weird, it could be fake.
No, if your Apple iPhone has two bytes out of it, it's definitely not real. So that's the key.
Two bytes, eh?
That's the key identification factor, is that two bytes out of
that's
your
a good
Apple
one.
Symbol.
That's a good one. But yeah, these fakes are around, eh? All around us.
Wow.
What's next, Kane?
Next, we're taking a look at Rockstar. You know who Rockstar Games is? They're the guys who made Grand Theft Auto.
Yes. Okay.
And Red Dead Redemption and things like that.
Yeah, boy.
They are, you know, they're going to keep making those games while those games keep making money. They have their own engine that they run off of and things like that. But it's not just their new games that they're super secretive about. Like, you can't find out anything about GTA 6 or Grand Theft Auto 6, which is the newest installment of that particular series, unless, you know, there's some sort of leak, which is very rare, or given to you directly from Rockstar. So there's actually a developer named Obi Vermaji, who worked as a technical director for the early 3D Grand Theft Auto trilogy, which was like a long time ago, more than a 20-year-old game. And he started talking about the game's developments on his blog earlier this month. And he wrote yesterday that now that's all over. He said, today, 22 November 2023, I got an email from Rockstar North. Apparently, some of the OGs there are upset by my blog. And he said, I generally didn't think anyone would mind me talking about a 20-year-old game, but I was wrong. Something about ruining the Rockstar mystique or something. So, yeah, he's not allowed to actually write about the games that he helped build 20 years ago. It's like those technologies aren't even relevant today. It's just crazy the reach that these guys have of protecting, you know, their brand identity. They'll go attack one random little guy blogging about it that worked for them 20 years ago. They'll pick him up and tell him, sorry, look, cease and desist. That's not going to cut it here. It's not going to fly. And I mean, that was within the month that he started writing about it. So he barely wrote about it at all. And they had already told him to cease and desist. And there were things like they considered a zombie game. One of the developers actually made a gun that shot ragdoll characters to chase Grand Theft Auto 4's maps.
Oh,
so it's like quite wild, like ideas like that, you know.
That's pretty cool, actually.
And in other news, which is a little bit better, we have the Tesla Roadster, which is a car that was made a while ago, and it had about 2,450 people who bought the Tesla Roadster. Well, Tesla has now released the Tesla Roadster as a fully open source documentation. So they went on to say that whatever we have, you now have, is how Elon Musk described the documents released for the 15-year-old Roadster. While that might be overstating it, the Roadster page includes service parts, owner's manuals, wiring schematics, R&D documents on the car's battery monitor board, vehicle display systems, HVAC controllers, and a trove of useful information for owners. And all open source. Meaning you can go and actually check the technical design specifications for how they manufactured the Roadster, and you could build one yourself if you had the right technology and if you were just genuinely interested on the technicals. You know, how did they achieve such a feat? What did they do? How did they wire it? What did the battery do? What voltage did they have running through the system? How did they handle the recharging? All this kind of stuff you can go see in the technical schematics, which are available open source. And Elon Musk's stance, which I really like, has always been that if someone comes along and builds a better electric car than Tesla, then that's actually fantastic for the world. So he's quite okay with that. And that's why he releases, you know, his technical blueprints and things like that. Very, very interesting. Also, the Amazon's iRobot acquisition is likely to get a thumbs up from the EU. If you didn't know, Amazon's iRobot, Amazon is acquiring iRobot. And that's a vacuum. I'm sure you've heard of it. It's the remote, it's the automated vacuum and mop system that roams through your house.
So it's better than Roomba.
The Roomba, basically.
Is it better than Roomba?
Well, it's classed as one of the best robots, you know, cleaning robots. And that deal is actually for $1.4 billion. So it's not a small deal. It's about 1/20th of Twitter. But still a massive deal for a robot cleaner, something that cleans and mops your house, $1.4 billion. And
it's nice for people who are lazy like me.
Yeah, and it basically just says that the regulators are okay with it, which is crazy because they usually step in for anything with a B in it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But to see them doing that's really, really cool. And finally, Netflix. You know, I always wonder, you know, about the production process at Netflix and how they go about deciding what shows to make and how much the shows are budgeted at and who gets paid and how do those funds get, you know, do they get paid to one person all at once? Do they release the funds slowly? You know, do they buy it like they buy a box of cereal, or do they, you know, pay it off over months and months and months? Mm. Are they the funders? Is there someone in charge? Like, I always wonder about that. That's
a good question,
yeah. So Netflix apparently wants its money back after a $55 million production fell short. According to the New York Times, which claims filmmaker Carl Eric Rinch pocketed the millions of dollars transferred to him for the production of a sci-fi series that we'll probably never see.
Yo.
Netflix wired Mr. Rinch's production company $11 million, bringing its total outlay to more than $55 million. And Mr. Rinch transferred $10.5 million of the $11 million to his personal brokerage account.
Oh, that's lovely.
At Charles Schwab. And using options, placed risky bets on the stock market.
Okay, somebody's got a problem.
Oh, no.
So it was never actually filmed?
I guess they put out, you know, an additional, 34 million. You know,
imagine he took all the money and then he said, okay, now we'll just do like a low budget thing and then give it to Netflix. And here you've got this self-produced series that he produced in his backyard.
I think it's just so cheeky because he gets paid $11 million, which is $44 million more than he had already been paid. And he takes $10 million. Of that money, not like $3 million or $1 million or $500,000. He takes $10 million.
He was going all in, man.
Straight to a stock brokerage to basically put risky bets on the stock market with like 99% of the money. For me, that's just crazy.
And now no series.
And now we don't get our sci-fi film. We need these films more than he needed that money. I'm telling you.
Yo, listen, you know what I like about my broadband is very often they go and they compare brands or products and then they write reviews on it.
Yes.
And I mean, it saves us a lot of time because now we know what to look out for, what we should buy or shouldn't buy. Have you got one of these LED load shedding light bulbs?
I do. I have a few of them all around the house.
Okay. How long do you charge them?
Usually I charge them, I just leave my lights on, and after about 3 to 5 hours usually they charge. It can take quite some time.
And
usually,
how long do they last during load shedding?
About an hour and a half max.
They don't reach the full 2 hours.
No, right? No.
So that's rarely. That's why my broadband tested several of these load shedding light bulbs in South Africa to see which ones offered the best battery life and brightness. And so they went and they tested a lot of these bulbs, screwed them in, and did some comprehensive testing on them, checking out their battery life, checking out how much lumens they emit, and all that kind of stuff. So they charged all of them, and then they saw what happened. So the bulb with the longest battery life across all the tests was the Magneto rechargeable 7-watt LED with a 2000 mAh battery. Magneto is the same brand. It's got those nice torches that you can recharge, those lights, those upright lights that people have for load shedding.
Crazy to see a 2000 milliamp battery, which is literally the size of what power banks used to be.
And that's inside a bulb, eh?
Inside a 7-watt bulb.
It's just a little block that's inside the cage, you know, below the bulb itself, the foot of the bulb. So this light actually performed really well, remained lit for 2 hours and 25 minutes after charging. So it can easily do the whole 2-hour load shedding, and obviously not the 4-hour load shedding. But the one that won was the 2000 mAh Magneto 7-watt rechargeable light bulb. It's almost 200 rand for it. It is available on Takealot. Screw in and the one with the pins. So both fittings. But I see that the recommended retail price for it should actually be 99 rand. So somebody inflated the price there, I think.
I was about to say it's about double, but I mean,
yeah,
I would pay like a lot of money a lot if it could just last the amount of time I need it to. But you know, there's another thing as well. Like one of my lights that are load shedding lights, when the power's on, this thing is so bright. It challenges that of the sun. It is so bright. Like I cannot look directly at it without needing to like recuperate. But when the power is off, it just dies so fast.
Oh, really?
It's like such a contrast between what it, like how much lumens it has with Eskom going through it and how much it has with just battery.
There's one woman who wrote a review on Takealot, and she said below one of the bulbs, she said, "I don't like this because when the power goes off, these bulbs fade so quickly and it feels like you're going blind." Like slowly your vision is fading, you know. I know that feeling, eh? Yeah. I know what she means.
And it happens so subtly that by the time you're actually feeling around your house to get around, you're like, isn't this light actually on? Did I just have a load shedding light? That's too funny.
So the Magneto one is on top, and then the Lumaglow had the second highest brightness of 225 lumens, followed by the Philips with 200 lumens. So some of those stay quite bright afterwards. But I would imagine that after, you know, a couple of months, maybe a year or so, you would see some degraded performance, especially with the battery being so small inside the bulb. And also it trickle charges, which means it charges while it's working, while it's on power. But it needs to be switched on to charge. That's the thing.
It's like you leave your light on the whole day. So
yeah,
you can have it
so basically
night.
Leave it on the whole day. You know, LEDs, they don't take much electricity. So no. Basically leave your LED on the whole day to make sure it's fully charged. But even with mine, if I leave it on the whole day, it still doesn't last 2 hours. I don't even know what the brand is called.
No, mine doesn't last 2 hours, eh?
I'd love to get my hands on one of those Magneto ones and see if it's true.
Should do some tests.
Yeah, because I'd love one that, you know, lasts 2 hours. But now, I mean, look at us now in 4 hours. And so you after 2 hours, you have to go outside and screw in another bulb.
You turn
in your outside
on.
Fitting. And then that one will go another 2 hours.
And on that note,
it's time to shut down the lights and say goodbye. Kane, thank you so much as always. Have a lekker weekend.
Thank you very much. And to all of our listeners, thank you for listening in. We'll see you next week.
Cheers, man.
Cheers, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Too much. I'ma need like two shots in my cup. Wanna get up, wanna get down.